pull up a chair. I want to tell you about an airplane that was supposed to be retired before your grandfather was born, and last month I watched one taxi past me on a grass strip with both radial engines coughing blue smoke and sounding, I swear, like it was laughing. This is Radio Hangar, I'm Taildragger, and this is the hangar where we do a little hangar flying about the machines that made us who we are. Today we need to talk about the Douglas DC-3, the Goonie Bird. The airplane that refused to die. Now before I get rolling, let me tell you, today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. And friend, the airplane I'm about to tell you about has more stories than any coin could hold. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. So, let's set the scene. It's the middle of the 1930s. Airline flying in America is a rough business. If you wanted to cross the country, you did it in fits and starts, hopping from airfield to airfield, and half the time you finished the trip on a train because the airplanes couldn't make money carrying passengers alone. They needed airmail contracts just to keep the lights on. Then a fellow named C.R. Smith, who ran American Airlines, got on the telephone with Donald Douglas out in Santa Monica, California, and the story goes that Smith kept him on that line for something like 2 hours, talking him into building a bigger, better version of the airplane. Douglas already had flying. Douglas didn't want to do it. He thought the market was too small, but Smith wanted an airplane with sleeping berths, a proper airliner that could carry people coast to coast in comfort and actually turn a profit doing it. What came out of that phone call first flew in December of 1935. They called the sleeper version the Douglas Sleeper Transport. Take the berths out, line it with seats, and you had the DC-3. Now here's where it gets interesting. That airplane changed everything. And I mean everything. For the first time, an airline could make money hauling passengers, no airmail subsidy required. By the end of the 1930s, the DC-3 was carrying the overwhelming majority of the airline passengers in this whole country. One airplane. It didn't just win the market, it built the market. Picture the cabin. 21 passengers, give or take, in wicker frame seats. The smell of hot oil and warm aluminum and somebody's cigarette. Because everybody smoked back then. Two Pratt and Whitney or Wright radials out on the wings. Big round engines turning slow and steady, and that sound coming through the aluminum skin like a heartbeat you could feel in your teeth. Cruising maybe 160, 180 miles an hour. Not fast by today's numbers, but it was warm, it was reliable, and it got there. Then the war came. And this is the part that gives me chills every time. The military looked at this airliner and said, "We'll take it." They pulled the fancy seats out, put in a big cargo door and a reinforced floor, and called it the C-47 Skytrain. The troops called it the Goonie Bird. General Eisenhower himself named it one of the handful of things that won the Second World War. Right up there with the Jeep and the bazooka and the landing craft. Think about that. An airliner designed to serve coffee to businessmen, standing in the same breath as the weapons of the war. On D-Day, the sky over Normandy was full of them. Wave after wave, towing gliders, dropping paratroopers into the dark. They flew the hump over the Himalayas into China when there was no other way to get supplies through. They flew the Berlin airlift. Wherever there was a job nobody else could do, somebody rolled out a Goonie Bird and did it. They built more than 10,000 of them in this country. License built thousands more overseas. And when the war ended, the government had all these war surplus C-47s sitting around cheap, and that flood of airplanes seeded the airlines of the entire world. Little operators, big operators, they all started with a Goonie Bird because you could buy one for next to nothing and it would fly forever. And that word forever, that's the thing about this airplane. There's an old joke among pilots that the only replacement for a DC-3 is another DC-3. And it's funny because it's true. They designed jets to replace it, turboprops to replace it. Fancy new twins with pressurization and radar, and still, decades later, the Goonie Bird is out there, hauling freight into gravel strips in Alaska, flying skydivers, dusting fields, running cargo in the parts of the world where the runway is a memory and the maintenance is done with a wrench and a prayer. I've had my hands on the yoke of one, and let me tell you what nobody warns you about. It's heavy. There's no power steering in your soul when you fly a DC-3. You fly it with your shoulders and your back. That tailwheel wants to swap ends with you on the ground if you get lazy on the rudder, and the whole airplane talks to you the entire time, every rivet and cable telling you exactly what it thinks. It is the most honest airplane I have ever flown. Some of these airframes flying today are older than the men and women flying them, way older. There are DC-3s working for a living right now that rolled off the line before Pearl Harbor. Original spar, original bones, patched and loved and kept alive by people who understand that they are not maintaining an airplane. They are keeping a promise. Back when Avigiz was cheap and airspace was free, the DC-3 was already an old-timer, and it just kept going. outlasted the wicker seats, outlasted the cigarettes, outlasted most of the airlines that flew it, and a good many of the pilots too. And that's what I want you to carry with you. We build airplanes now that are lighter, faster, smarter, good. I'm glad. But every so often you'll hear a pair of big radials come rumbling over the field, and you'll look up, and there she is, slow and steady and eternal, reminding all of us that they got something exactly right in 1935. And it never needed fixing, my thanks to the good folks at the Smithsonian and the historians at Boeing, who keeps the Douglas story alive, and to every A&P mechanic still turning wrenches on those old radials for helping me keep the facts straight over the years. You can find us anytime at radiohanger.com. Next time you see a Goonie bird, tip your hat. She's earned it. This is Taildragger, and I'll see you at the field.